Truvillion Next is a division of Truvillion, a financial services specialist search and talent advisory firm. Since inception, the Truvillion team has dedicated itself to enhancing the return on investment of a company's most important resource, its people.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Love, head of banking and fintech at Truvillion. I'm here in beautiful Fredericksburg, Texas at the FedFIS Roundup. I'm here with Trey Mouse, and we are looking at tumbleweed literally tumbling in front of us, as well as lizards, airplanes, and this is
This is the hangar, I mean.
Right. We're at the Hangar Hotel in the middle of kind of nowhere in Fredericksburg, but it's a pretty cool spot. Thanks for joining me. I don't know if you want to further introduce yourself.
Sure. Yeah, no, just to give a context, executive chairman of a bank up in Oregon, Lewis and Clark Bank, and also the CEO and one of the co-founders of Bank Evo, and I'll talk a little bit more about that and kind of some of the things we've learned along the way. Sure. As a newer entrant into the banking as a service or channel partnership ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, and thanks for taking a little time out of the conference here to talk with me. We've known each other for, I don't know, about a year or so. Yep. I forget how we got connected, but I'd love to hear a little bit more about your journey.
I think it actually might have been through something like this.
Yeah, so. Maybe. Yeah. I think you're right. We're obviously good friends with the Coastal Community Group.
Yep.
You know, up there, we helped Kurt land there recently. But I'd love to hear about your kind of foray into innovation at Lewis and Clark. Tell me about the journey thus far.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's one thing to talk about one bank's journey. It's another to think about what does that mean for all the other banks that have been thinking about this, but maybe haven't taken that first step. And we were one of those 3 years ago. And fortunately had a pretty good relationship over the years with Eric Sprink up at Coastal. And it was, he's such a generous individual, and I appreciate that. And I know that's something that's not uncommon in community banking. And so I encourage everybody to kind of convey that to their fellow peers. But that was really helpful in getting us thinking about, yeah, this is something that's possible. Coastal, Meta, Stride Choice, et cetera. All these banks have been doing this for a long time. Really got it nailed down. And those of us that haven't been doing it for 10 plus years needed to figure out, well, how do we take that first step? And Eric really was the instrumental part of that.
Yeah, he's the man. We love Eric.
Really. I don't want to keep waxing on about that, but it makes such a big difference in going, you know, down that path. And it's really important for an industry like ours that's so heavily regulated on the prudential and consumer protection side to get it done right. And you can't just invent it from scratch. You've got to learn from others. So I thank Eric for that. So about 3 years ago, right before the pandemic started, we started thinking about, we've got this small community bank that's successful in its own geographic market. It's something we want to protect. I think a lot of us want to protect the core of community banking in our local geographic market, but we recognize that we needed to augment and innovate and in order to meet market needs that were changing very rapidly and will over the next 5, 10, 15 plus years. And we don't want that divergence to continue between how we go to market and how the marketplace would like to consume financial services or banking products. And so, banking as a service seemed like the most obvious step to take or a direction to take. There could have been other, you know, ways of channels to augment revenue, but that really was the one that we felt fit our culture the best. Yeah. So about 3 years ago, met with Eric a few times and got the courage to actually take that first step. And that first step was to decide as a board that we were going to make this a strategic priority for us moving forward. You know, looking back,
can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Did you have to maybe bring new talent in at that time, or did you kind of wait a little further? Because obviously, talent is my space.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Just curious.
No, that's a great question. So,
mean to derail your thought.
No, but initially, so if I were to think of it from kind of the governance level down, it really was deciding at the most challenging obstacle that I faced was, how do you reorient an entire company and a bank at that to embrace change and embrace innovation and doing things differently that are going to, it's not that it's doing things differently. People, I think, can get used to that. It's doing things in a way that might expose the bank to risk. Mm-hmm. And most people who work at a bank particularly in back office, want to protect the bank.
Yeah.
And so one of the most important statements that we made on a regular basis was, we're going to protect what we built. This thing is very important. That is the traditional bank. But we can grow in new and creative ways, and that's really where channel partnerships is probably a better way to describe it than banking as a service in the way that we went to market. But to answer your question, not so much at the governance level. So we still have the same board. Once the board made that decision to move forward collectively, that drove the strategic priorities down to the bank. And but in terms of individuals, so recruiting, yes, we did need to. And here's how we did it.
Yeah.
Rather than disrupt the bank itself, we formed a separate entity under the holding company to focus solely on innovation and focus solely on, in this case, banking as a service and channel partnerships. So developing that outside that's Bank Evo.
Yeah.
And so okay. Bank Evo's mandate was to focus on developing and deploying channel partnerships in concert with the bank so that we could get these deployed within a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
Now that required people.
Yeah.
So that, and people of different mindsets, but also had some banking background. So anyway,
I
want to talk about the journey, kind of my thoughts as it relates to the rest.
Thanks
of
for
the
letting
industry.
Me divert you, to the top
well,
conversation.
I mean, given,
yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously now you've taken some steps.
Yep.
I think you've alluded to maybe going live with some things in the coming year, months. Tell me what's next, and tell me a little bit more about like the moment we're in the industry.
Sure.
There's been some regulatory headwinds, et cetera, kind of proving your point to build that governance piece first, protect the house, right?
Yeah. No, it's when it looked back, it's it's taken us 3 years from making the decision to move forward. Really 2 years of implementation. We've got multiple programs that are up and running now, and several more that are coming online in the next quarter. And we're pausing at that point because we need to make sure we can absorb those. And a lot of those partnerships, and the reason I call them channel partnerships is we're working in concert to reach the end user, whether it's through their technology or through their client bases. And we are supplying the product, so the banking product, all the way to that end user, but with the assistance of that channel partner.
Yeah.
And so that's a really tightly intertwined relationship, rather than thinking about it as banking as a service,
yeah,
where we're just delivering a service or banking product to, say, a fintech.
That name is so reviled. People don't like that name anymore.
I don't know. I understand it was, when you think about SaaS, we were trying to kind of play that.
You hear embedded finance, yeah, embedded, yeah, banking, yeah, a little bit more, yeah.
So I think, having been down, originally we started on the fintech side, working solely with fintechs as partners. And that was a great process to go through and learning experience for us. And it got me thinking about, is that the future of community banks working in strategic or channel partnership arrangements? And I think it is right now. I think it's the most readily available step for us. So let's say you're a $200 million bank, a $400 million bank, or a $1 billion bank. These are all accessible to banks of each of those sizes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fintechs are probably the fastest way to get to the finish line. So partnering with a fintech that's got a good idea on how to go to market with their new idea, product or service, or niche, because that is their business. They will focus 100% on that, and they're willing to burn money to get there. The downside of that is we have to do what we do best as banks, and that is make sure that we rein in that enthusiasm to make sure that prudential, so safety and soundness, and consumer protection considerations are incorporated into every element of that deployment, because we're ultimately responsible for how it gets delivered to that consumer or that business at the very end of the chain.
Right.
So we think about a supply chain. They are really acting, and the way the contracts are written is they are the service provider to us, and their service providers are fourth parties to us as well. And so we have to treat them from a third party risk management standpoint as such.
Yeah.
But I think point A to point B, fintechs are a great way to get started. We have since expanded into what I think is the biggest opportunity for community banks, and that is working with more traditional corporates or corporate enterprises that have a business model that generates revenue in an area other than banking products and services, but could really use the integration. I don't mean just embedding, but actual full integration or deep integration of a banking product or service or a series of them. When I think about raw materials, we have the ability to extend capital, so lend, we have the ability to store money, we have the ability to move money. In its rawest form, you can mix and match those in a variety of ways that really feed into, and I've got a couple examples that are kind of interesting, but yeah, that feed into the overall workflow that a company has and to elevate its value proposition to its existing. And I think that's a really important consideration. They have a fintech doesn't, but a corporate enterprise has an existing client base, and they can be pretty substantial. And if this is an important element to how they deliver maybe more products and services, or they just replace what they're using now, that's maybe a banking function like payments, it can instantly create revenue flow for a community bank. But what I love about this is the community banks, we're really good at working with our business clients and solving problems and making them successful. That's all this is, but it's on a bigger scale. And what a lot of mid-size and large companies have dealt with up until now has been larger money center banks or large banks that really are just providing a homogenous product that somebody picks off the shelf, and it can't be customized to a solution that they're looking for. And so it's been really fun to work through this. So one example, company that serves the trucking industry, they've got tens of thousands of carriers that they serve, needs a couple different forms of banking raw materials. One of those is in the form of deposit accounts and cards. So you think about the standard neobank deployment. Well, just throwing that into the marketplace through a fintech is one thing, but actually being able to use it in an existing client base where it solves a problem of instantly moving money from a carrier to a 1099 driver is a really cool way of, one, getting deposit balances, two, having card interchange, and three, solving a problem for a large client. It's a lot of fun to think of those things. And, we really haven't up until now had the opportunity to really either have the capacity to or really thought around how do we solve problems for much larger companies. Another one with that company is on the card acquisition side. So they had historically not been able to accept credit cards for their, in this case, a fuel card system. And we figured out a way to get that done. So there's just some really, really cool applications.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you come alive talking about solving these problems, and it's also so neat to see a community bank of your size come up with an idea that affects, say, tens of thousands of Americans.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really inspiring stuff.
It really is, and that's why I think it's consistent with the DNA of us as community banks.
Yeah.
And also in the way that we go to market. And I think you and I were talking earlier about the frustration sometimes of hearing somebody where they are today and saying, well, that's great for you, but it's not really accessible, to me or to one of my peers.
Right.
And I can tell you, I felt that way 3 years ago. And, we took that first step really from the board level down, and it is highly accessible. And it's also, it's one thing to start a bit. We were talking earlier too about, let's say you start a wealth management division or a trust company or a mortgage shop. We know we need to go to market, and that's going to take time to kind of build up, and maybe it'll be successful, maybe it won't. I can tell you there's a tremendous amount of demand for this. So I know the revenue and opportunities are there for community banks. Taking that first step is really is that first step to getting to that point. And I don't think I would have felt that it was as achievable 3 years ago as I do now, having been through the process. So I definitely encourage banks to consider this if they're. One caveat, and that would be there are a lot of regulatory considerations around this because we're relying on other. One, it's a new product or service. There's an expansion. There's growth that's occurring, and you're working with third parties in order to get this done. And so, I'd highly encourage. Consent orders are a great resource to look at and say, okay, what's the roadmap to getting it done right? In addition to other resources.
Great bedtime reading too.
Yeah, right? It is. No, it's one of the first things we did is say, okay, where are those where do people stub their toes?
No, it's great.
But there is a path a path there. And I know, you know, we're talking about the conference we're at today. BHB has an association that was stood up earlier this year by some of us that are doing this, and we're obviously one of the newer ones doing it. But part of that focus of the association is to really illustrate the path to get to point B and that roadmap, so that other banks, besides those of us who are doing it now, can really take that first step and be successful.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing, you know, some of your wisdom and things that have affected you over the last few years. I think this is great. And thanks again for your time, Trey.
You bet. Anytime.
All right.